And the reason will come for us all.
Hey, Samantha, where can they find us on the social medias?
I am so glad you asked. They can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Reaper Tales Podcast and on TikTok at reaper.tales.podc. Not pod, just podc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can email us at reapergals@reapertales.com. I'm always looking at it. So if you're one of the ones that emails me on a regular basis, you know that. I do respond almost in real time, unless like
almost.
I'm on vacation or like I'm bed rotting, but that's a different thing. So email us at reapergals, G-A-L-S, at reapertales.com. Email me to tell me that I look pretty. Email me to tell me I'm doing a good job and to send us your show suggestions and anything else that you want us to cover or anything like that. So, yeah.
And please remember to like, rate, review, subscribe, all the things you lovely listeners know what to do anyway on any of the listening platforms that you use. As per usual, you get bonus points if you do it on platforms you don't listen to us on, but you give us a nice little review. And worded reviews will get special shout outs. So if you are so inclined to do so, please do us a favor. Makes it a little easier for people to find us. You know, even if it's people you don't like and you don't like us, it doesn't hurt. Go ahead. Why not?
Yeah,
it still works.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to be listed out, by the way, on the worded reviews, it's too bad. We're still going to give you a shout out.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if you say we smell like boogers or something like that. Okay, thanks.
Rude.
Hello, I'm Montana.
And I'm Samantha.
And you're listening to
Reaper Tales. And today,
did you forget what we were supposed to say?
I knew you were going to say that. And today I am going to tell the ladies about the outrageous life of Miss Tallulah Bankhead. But before I get to that, Montana, what did I send you about what we should be drinking, but you did not pre-make? Because it's complicated.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, also, like, I don't have this many peanuts.
And Who knew? I thought if anybody would have them, you would. But
you know what?
I did send to you today, so.
I thought for sure this episode was going to be about doubloons. Boy, was I wrong. So apparently this person has a drink named after them, the Tallulah. Yeah. And it is, we're just going to round up here because nobody's going to put 1.75 ounces of Jack Daniels into anything. No. Just do 2 ounces. Okay.
I mean, why not? Trust me, she would approve.
Then you're going to have 1 ounce of peanut orgite. Orgite?
Orgite.
Orgite. Oui, oui. and Coca-Cola. I don't know how much. Measure with your
heart,
soul, and your eyeballs. Apparently to make the peanut orgite. Okay. You need like 2 cups of roasted unsalted peanuts. 1.5 cups of sugar. 1¼ cups of water, 1 teaspoon of orange flower water, which everybody has on hand, and 1 ounce of brandy or vodka. I don't really know what you do with that. You put it in like a food processor or something, and then it does its thing. For the amount that you're making, and then you turn around and only use 1 ounce for this, it seems a little bit excessive on the measurements, but you do you.
If you're anything like her, you will end up using it all. So
probably
it'd be fine.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, just keep it on hand in case you want to make this drink again. It doesn't give any instructions on how to make the drink. I guess you just toss all that shit together and put it in a glass.
Basically.
And then there you go. That works.
It sounds like a very rich drink, and I almost want to make it just because I kind of like all of the ingredients, so I feel like I would actually enjoy the drink, to be perfectly honest.
But I love this note here. It's like the most laborious portion of the recipe is creating the orgeat, which involves boiling unsalted peanuts in a simple syrup, then allowing the mixture to sit and then straining it through a cheesecloth. No shit. What are you talking about? Can I not buy a bottle?
I'm assuming that there's a way you can buy it. I've never seen it, but I'm not going to say it's not available. So I would have to think that you would be able to buy it in some way, form, or fashion. But, I mean, I had to use that drink just because it is named after her. So, I mean, that makes sense. So, before I start with the tale of the amazing Tallulah Bankhead, I do have a video that I want you guys to watch. So, get ready. I'm going to send it to you.
Okay. I remember, so here's the thing, like, I used to watch I Love Lucy constantly growing up, so I do remember that episode.
I did too. As soon as I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, I know who she is. But yeah. The darling, that's the thing, like, that was what she was known for. Also, one thing that she was known for is, or at least they have hypothesized, that Cruella de Vil on Disney's 101 Dalmatians was based off of her character.
Oh.
Because of the way that her voice is, it's super raspy, and the darling and all of that kind of goes along with it. When you think about it, yeah, it actually does kind of make sense.
Hard relate.
So I definitely remember watching that. It's a little weird to watch it now as an adult because there's like certain things that I caught that I know I didn't catch when I was a kid. But I definitely remember watching that.
What a time.
I do like the part where she, what was the part? When Miss Bankhead is bored, Miss Bankhead will let you know. She's got an adoring fan. no, please let her keep going. By all means.
Me.
Now we've been introduced to her, at least in her later years. Tallulah Brockman Bankhead was born on January 31st, 1902 in Huntsville, Alabama, to Adelaide Eugenia Bankhead and William Bankhead. Her parents had quite the interesting and somewhat romantic tale. At least some would deem it romantic, I guess. But the shortened version, very shortened version, is according to the Wicked North Alabama book, which I have covered a couple of times, Adelaide was from a prominent Mississippi family and was engaged to Mary. While visiting one of her bridesmaids in Huntsville, she met attorney William Bankhead. And it was love at first sight. Adelaide's engagement was called off, and she married Bankhead instead.
When you know, you know.
I mean, I guess so. Apparently, she was quite stunning from everything that I read. Things seemed to go pretty well initially for Will and Adelaide Bankhead. Their first daughter, Evelyn Eugenie, was born on January 24th, 1901. And just a little over a year later, their second child and daughter, Tallulah, also entered the world. According to her parents, Tallulah was named after her paternal grandmother, who, according to family tales, received her name after her parents conceived her at Tallulah Falls in Georgia on their honeymoon.
How disgusting.
Wouldn't it be nice to know where your parents conceived you?
Hey, kid, I named you after that one time I boinked your mom. You're welcome.
Well, at least they, I mean, I guess at least they could actually say they knew where it was, maybe.
That's also anyway. A really sad indication for their sex life.
I mean, back in the 1900s,
and sad.
I can kind of get it, but that's fair. After Adelaide had Tallulah, unfortunately, she contracted or developed, I don't really know the appropriate term, maternal sepsis, and passed away on February 23rd, 1902. So not even a month later.
Wowza.
Unfortunately, Adelaide's own mother had actually also died of the exact same fate when she had her second daughter and Adelaide's sister, Clara May. Which makes me wonder if that may have been a contributing factor to Tallulah not seeming to want children later on in life, but we'll never really know.
I mean, maybe.
I mean, her mom and her grandmother both died of it, so quite possibly.
Or it could just be another pin in the hat of, hey, I don't want them.
Yeah, fair enough. Obviously, she had a lot going on in her life, too. Mm-hmm. Slide aside, because I went down a rabbit hole, so I figured I'd take you along for at least part of the journey. For those that do not know, maternal sepsis, quote, refers to sepsis that results from infection during pregnancy, childbirth, post-abortion, or postpartum period. Sepsis, which is also called blood poisoning, is the body's overwhelming and life-threatening response to infection. Sepsis kills and disables millions, more than breast cancer, lung cancer, and stroke combined. Sepsis and septic shock can result from an infection anywhere in the body, such as pneumonia, influenza, or a urinary tract infection. Worldwide, one-third of people who develop sepsis will die. Many who do survive are left with life-changing effects, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic pain and fatigue, organ dysfunction, and/or amputations. Maternal and postpartum sepsis are more common in the developing countries, but they also do strike people in wealthier countries, including the United States. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, sepsis is the second leading cause of pregnancy-related deaths. Between 2014 and 2017, infection or sepsis caused 12.7% of pregnancy-related deaths in the United States. Pregnancy-associated sepsis requires early detection, accurate diagnosis, and aggressive treatment. In the United Kingdom, a 2019 study found that sepsis accounted for as many as 25% of all maternal deaths in that country. And that was from sepsis.org website.
It's not surprising. Like, just like the amount of, like, because I personally know somebody who's had sepsis. And they got it from a broken bone. Like, it.
Yeah, I mean, the one reason why I wanted to cover it is because, like, you think of things a lot of times from, like, the 1900s and, okay, yeah, that was a problem back then. Not, it's still a problem. I mean, 2014 and 17, still nearly 13%. That's pretty high, considering.
It's really aggressive. And, like, even if you do get, like you said, even if you do get treatment for it, there are lifelong lasting effects of it. Like the organ thing, the kidney function, liver function, things like that. Yeah.
Well, and that's why you say, like, and since COVID has been brought about, that number has actually increased according to that website.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to 20-25% now, because developing that can also cause that to be worse and then end up causing everything to fall apart. You pass away. So that's the other thing. Like, the sepsis can cause organ failure. So the cause of death is organ failure, but the reason why your organs failed was due to sepsis. So
Yeah. It's
a domino effect. But anyway, just wanted to cover that just so it's like still in your mind. Yeah, that was a problem back then, but it's still a problem now.
Well, I also think it's really important to cover it, too, because didn't we just have the awareness, pregnancy death awareness, or like that just happened like last week, right? Oh, April 11th to April 17th. I had it right. So Black Maternal Health Week is recognized each year from April 11th to April 17th just to bring awareness to those in the Black community who lose their life due to that. Anyway. Yeah, but I just thought that was interesting because I knew I had just recently seen something about it. And I was like, oh, well, this is kind of
timely.
Mm-hmm.
On accident. But
cheers.
I mean, it's important to talk about these things anyway, regardless of the situation or the timing. But I'm glad that it turned up a good time.
Hey, it's the first time we've done that on accident.
On accident. Because it's always on purpose. So getting back to it, William Bankhead and his family were steeped in Southern politics. Democrats to the bone. William served as Speaker of the House from 1936 to 1940. Her uncle, John H. Bankhead II, and her grandfather, John H. Bankhead, were both senators. And that's from Wicked North Alabama. Her aunt was also involved in government as well. Marie Bankhead Owen became the first woman to head an Alabama state government agency when she became the director of the Alabama Department of Archives and History in 1920.
Nerd.
And that was from awhf.org. Nerd?
What?
Whatever.
It's a very nerdy thing to be in.
Archives she actually, I think... If I
paperwork?
Read correctly, her husband was the first director, and when he died, she took over. So she ended up becoming the first woman to head the department, which I feel like that's still pretty big in the 1920s for her to take over something like that. But it also makes sense because she was probably doing it anyway, let's be honest.
Yeah, probably. That's what nerds do.
Tallulah described herself as a Democrat as well, but it would be fair to say she was a bit more liberal than the rest of her Southern family. Quick note, friendly reminder, the Democratic and Republican parties switched around the 1930s, after the Depression, which was well after this. Quote, almost 60 years later, the Great Depression became a catalyst for a massive political shakeup. The Republican Party had continued to be dominated by wealthy businessmen, which meant that they had come to favor a laissez-faire policy that supported big business. Those policies were effective when the economy was booming, but were disastrous when it wasn't. When the economy crashed in 1929, the Republican president, Herbert Hoover, opted not to intervene, earning him and his party the ire of the American public. Franklin D. Roosevelt, a Democrat, sensed the need for change. He campaigned on a promise of government intervention, financial assistance, and concern for the welfare of the people. He won the 1932 election by a landslide. It was FDR's campaign policies that caused a major shift in the party ideologies. And that was from studentsofhistory.com. So, just to clarify, because we've mentioned it before, but we've never actually specifically stated the timeline.
Yeah, and that was on the Wilmington Massacre episode. Mm-hmm. And we went into a little bit of detail of how the parties were back then.
So, back to our regularly scheduled program. Tallulah was sent to many schools growing up, which was her family's attempt at making her a proper lady and to keep her out of trouble, even sending her to a Roman Catholic school for several years, despite the fact that she was raised a Methodist.
I don't think they did the best job in doing that.
Oh, no. I'll get to it. After the loss of their mother, the girls moved place to place to be raised by various relatives and sometimes to live with their father, who, remember, he was in politics, so he was busy. They were also sometimes separated, unfortunately. They would live with either their grandparents, who lived in Jasper, Alabama, their aunt, Marie Bankhead Owen, who I earlier mentioned, and her husband, Thomas, who both lived in Montgomery, Alabama, or other relatives that lived in Washington, D.C., because, again, they were big in politics.
God, what a horrible place to end up. Jasper,
no,
Alabama.
I'm telling you. That wasn't that far away from my last home. Shut up.
There's a food truck in Jasper, Alabama that stalks my Facebook page.
Oh, is that where it's from?
That's funny.
I didn't realize that. So after Bankhead remarried, the girls spent some time with them, and on one occasion, this reminds me so much of my stepdaughters. Bankhead caught Tallulah mimicking her stepmother, Florence McGuire Bankhead, whom he married in 1914. He told her she should take up acting, and apparently she took his advice to heart. Tallulah, who was described by some as, quote, an extremely homely child, overweight, and with a deep, husky voice resulting from chronic bronchitis, end quote, whereas others described her as, quote, an exhibitionist, performer, personality, and star from the very beginning, end quote, entered a beauty contest for a magazine at the age of 15, sending in her picture but forgetting to include her name and address. Although there were reports that she intentionally left out her name, hoping the judges would wonder at her identity and extend the suspense through the magazine's next issue. Either way, it worked. When she heard back from them, despite the fact that it later came to light that her picture had been chosen as a finalist, her family hoped she would stop pursuing acting and modeling, and I'm sure pursue a more reasonable career or maybe in the family business. As they stated that she was not an attractive child. I'm getting mixed messages here because she was a finalist. You're saying she's not attractive. I'm kind of confused.
Also, like, what kind of asshole looks at their kid and is like, first off, why are you like judging the attractiveness of your child? That
of a 15-year-old,
problematic. The other thing is, like, there's never been a point in my life where I've looked at a child and been like, they're not attractive. Why are you thinking like this? What is happening?
I think one thing is they were, because I have heard this, they were like, you're pretty, but not pretty enough to be a model or an actor or in theater. People aren't going to accept you, blah, blah, blah. I've definitely heard that type of thing. Even on reality shows, I've seen that. I've even heard people in public talking to kids in a similar fashion. So I wonder if some of it was them trying to be helpful in managing expectations because they felt like she didn't match the quote ideal for that position. Regardless, let her do what she wants to do. Like, let her try. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. That's also a lesson.
Let you pick these standards for beauty. Fuck off.
Anyway, in either case, that simply didn't happen, and Tallulah decided to move to New York with her aunt as chaperone to try the theater. She stayed in New York for nearly 2 years and made her Broadway debut in Squab Farm. And according to Britannica.com, though she lacked training and discipline, she possessed a dazzling stage presence. Her husky voice provided fascinating contrast with her good looks. So again, somebody else says she looked good. I don't know. I think she was quite stunning personally, but
she sounds like me. I'm going to be honest.
Well, you're not wrong. We haven't gotten to the good part yet. So that brings us to one of the things that was reported over and over in my research. Tallulah was known almost as much for her loud and indecent lifestyle as she was for her acting and theater work.
Sounding more and more like me.
She was known as outspoken and being quick-witted, two things we know weren't allowed back in the 20s or 30s, or now, in some cases.
Or the 20s and 30s now.
Yeah, true. 100 years later, we've made a little bit of progress, hopefully.
We've come so far.
In 1923, she was to appear opposite Gerald Demarier. I don't know. It's a French, so I'm not going to even try.
Is that a man?
Rope Dancers. Huh?
Is that a man?
Yeah.
Unimportant.
Which was to be made in London, so she made the journey to England. According to Britannica.com, quote, thereby launched what was perhaps the most spectacular London stage career of the 1920s. Her calculatedly outrageous public behavior, her multiple romances, and her habit of wearing flimsy lingerie on stage, whether the script called for it or not, endeared her fans. Notably, her, quote, the gallery girls, end quote, who showed up at every performance to express their noisy idolatry while annoying her detractors. After a succession of mediocre, quote, sex dramas, end quote, that made few demands on her talent, Bankhead confounded her critics with her brilliant performance as a troubled young waitress in the London production of Sidney Howard's They Knew What They Wanted in 1925.
See, you know what? I'm loving this. She goes on stage with lingerie and she is like deemed like this like cool ass party girl actress. I go on my porch in lingerie and I have the cops called on me. So, unfortunately,
slight difference.
Not the same.
In no. lifestyle. But yeah.
Maybe she was back then's Kristen Stewart. I don't know if you've seen it recently, but she went out in underwear, just living her life.
All
in
right.
granny panties. Yeah.
You do. Well, you.
I mean, I loved it. I'm a big fan of Kristen Stewart, if you guys didn't know.
Twilight. I would say there's some similarities there, I guess. Sure. She stayed in London until 1931, returning to New York, signing a contract with Paramount Pictures, and developed her American career. Mm. According to Alabama Women's Hall of Fame, the 6 films she made with Paramount weren't really anything special and certainly weren't her best. She also wrote an autobiography, which I'll go over later, and returned to the stage in New York, being much more successful in those roles than she had been in the previous American films. Which, let's be honest, a big part of the films is the director, it's the script, and I don't know how choosy she was in either of those things or if she even had a choice considering she signed a contract. So,
well, even like back then,
you can only work with what you're given.
The filming industry worked was vastly different. Well, it was vastly different then. These companies that signed you onto contracts, you had like a set amount of films that you were required to record. Whether or not they were trash or not, it just was a way to get your name constantly out there so that people were seeing it, so it would raise who you were. But they controlled everything from like what movie you were in, what you wore, where you ate dinner, and who you married. Like it was.
Well, and she hadn't had a film career at this point in the United States. She had only been in the theater in New York.
And they didn't.
So this was getting her name out there. And she, I think one or maybe two of the films were in New York, and then she ended up having to move to L.A. to do the rest of the films. So There was a bit of moving around, but I think this was just her way of trying to get her name out there once she got back to America.
Well, and it was
signing a contract and you're getting paid. So I'm sure she needs money too.
Sort of. Not much.
So in 1939, she received the part of a lifetime, inaugurating the role of Regina Hubbard Giddings in Lillian Hellman's The Little Foxes, which was mentioned in the clip that I sent you. Hellman's melodrama reflects the lives of her well-to-do relatives in Demopolis at the turn of the 20th century. For her portrayal, Tallulah won the New York Drama Critics Award for Best Performance. Life magazine's March 6, 1939 picture story on the play included a cover photograph of Tallulah as Regina Giddings. After the play closed on Broadway, Bankhead and the cast spent the following year touring the United States. In 1942, she won another New York Drama Critics Award for Best Performance and Variety Magazine's Actress of the Year Award for the role of Sabrina in Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, The Skin of Our Teeth. Again, she toured the country with the play after its Broadway run.
Everything that you say...
Encyclopedia of Alabama.
I'm expecting you to say something else. When you first said playing Regina, I was like, oh, she was in Mean Girls.
George.
And then you said, and then you said Sabrina something. And I was like, oh, the teenage witch. No, not that. And then when you said Wharton, I was like, here's a who?
That's Horton. Here's a who.
You're ADD. That is Horton.
Enough.
I wasn't going to correct her.
Whatever.
We're getting there. She appeared in several more films, one of which was Lifeboat, which was also mentioned in the clip, in 1944, directed by the famous director, you've probably heard of him, Alfred Hitchcock, which was adapted from a John Steinbeck short story and an award-winning film nominated for 3 Academy Awards, which were Best Director, Best Story, and Best Cinematography, and 1-2 others, National Board of Review for Top 10 Films, and New York Film Critics Circle Award for Best Actress, which obviously she took home. But because she was no longer under a long-term contract to a Hollywood studio, she was not nominated for an Oscar, because I'm assuming that that's a requirement to get an Oscar. I wasn't going to go down that rabbit hole because I really didn't care. But that was what the website or the article said, is because she wasn't in a contract with a Hollywood studio, she wasn't up for nomination.
I don't know anything about like entertainment awards. No. I mean, I've never even watched one. Don't know. No.
I watch the clips. I really appreciate all of the people that pull the important clips out so I can just watch those. Yeah.
I mean, I like the dresses. I like the outfits, but I can see that by not watching that. Like, I can see that.
Well, you can watch a reel and they'll go over all the highlights. So done. Yeah. A lot quicker.
Perfect. Don't know what they're being nominated for. Don't know which one's a music or which one's a movie or which one's what. Don't know.
I have a general idea of what the different awards are. But as far as for the actors, like the difference between them, I have no idea. I that doesn't affect me in any real way. So don't really pay attention to it personally.
I think I would get really like hung up on the whole like best supporting actress. Like if I was in a movie... If I was like Lindsay Lohan in Mean Girls, I don't know why I'm going back to Mean Girls, and I got nominated for like best supporting actress in that, I'd be like, I thought I was the main character. Like, I would be hung up on that. I don't really know what makes a supporting actor.
There's apparently a lot of rules. I started to pull it up and I saw it was like a 72-page document. I said, I don't have time for this, and I just closed it back down. But there's a lot of rules about the various
My feelings would just
awards.
Be constantly hurt, you know?
I think they are, honestly, by a lot of people. I mean, it's, you got to develop some pretty tough, thick skin to go through it.
I cried for 30 minutes about a snail today.
This is true. This is true. That's not the career meant for you, and that's okay.
There's a lot of careers that are not meant for me.
Any case, throughout her career, she was known as quite the party animal, apparently, so to speak. Just a few things reported in Wicked North Alabama. Tallulah eventually made her way to the London stage, where she was a sensation for a number of years. Her outrageous lifestyle was already drawing attention. She was investigated for corruption of several Eaton school boys.
Okay.
Hey, sure. Love it. Wait, was she
engaging, like, oh, wait,
underage?
By engaging them in indecent and unnatural sex acts. But charges were never brought against her.
Honey.
I don't know.
God. Well, that's not good.
I want to say Eaton is like a finishing school, but I could be wrong. So it could be like, I think Eaton is older. Boys.
I'm all for, you know, corrupting the corrupted, honey. But we gotta make sure that they're of age.
Well, let's see. When she was in London, she moved there in...
It's a college.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
So they were of age.
Yeah. Okay. So she moved to London in 23 and she was born in 02. So she was only about 20, 21 around that time. 21, 22 maybe. So, so she, it wouldn't have been like a big age difference. But
oh yeah, go off. Corrupt. All day.
I don't think she had door, to work like, really I'm hard for that.
Today. Yeah.
Let's be honest. She wasn't working really hard on that. They were like, oh, sure. Okay. Absolutely. Let's try that.
No, yeah, absolutely not.
Oh, it'll get better. Hang on. Just
yikes.
Hold on to your underwear. Tallulah once turned cartwheels at a party, sans underwear. She welcomed guests at her door. Well, actually, wasn't there a text message exchange where I told you needed to wear shorts under a dress because you couldn't be ladylike if you tried?
Yeah, you did tell me that. Actually, I did cartwheels with no underwear wearing a toga at it. Toga party. That was not still... a college. I don't know.
Of course it wasn't. You remember most picture. Of it.
I'll send you that, Kelsey, so you can not of the cartwheel, just me in a toga.
Please clarify.
I wouldn't be able to use that for anything.
Oh man. I'm doing everything in my power to get us off topic. I'm so sorry.
You're really trying. She welcomed guests at her door during one of her parties with her ever-present cigarette holder in her hand and no clothing. A startled guest was surprised to see that everyone carried on around her as if nothing were out of the ordinary. One of her very straight-laced elderly friends commented to an unhinged guest, quote, "I don't know why Tallulah goes around naked. She has so many pretty frocks," end quote.
She also has a pretty body. Let her show it if she wants to. Also, why and are she you was at this party very if you're questioning
comfortable.
It?
Yeah, no yeah. kidding. She was obviously very comfortable in her own body.
Obviously, you weren't comfortable enough. You stayed. You wanted to see it.
Yeah, apparently. And maybe that's what made them uncomfortable. Tallulah insisted on punctuality when guests were invited to her house. Yet she once forgave a male guest for being hours late because he brought her flowers he had decorated by hand. It seems that the man bought tulips and then decided that some needed stripes and others needed polka dots. He applied the stripes and polka dots with paint and then waited for them to dry before showing up at Tallulah's home. I feel like drugs were involved.
Drugs were definitely involved. Speed was a very big thing back then. Also, I love that she's so like, I'm not going to wear clothes. I'm going to like corrupt boys. But she has like a staunch... like thing
my door about, closes like, being and locks at a certain
like,
time
you. Listen, love Tina to death, but fuck her, she showed up 5 minutes late. Done.
She's never invited to another party. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I can't handle it.
It's over.
That's fair. It's fair. Wow. Punctuality is important. Friends,
is it?
Be on time. Yes, it is.
Never Montana. Been on time a day in my life.
Absolutely. I know. Kelsey's giving a look right now. I was on time to this meeting tonight.
It was not.
Tallulah bought herself a Bentley. I love this part. I love this one so much. Tallulah bought herself a Bentley, even though she had not yet learned to drive. Her sense of direction was worse than her driving, however, and she would call a taxi to lead the way from one point to another while she followed behind.
Honey, no. What?
She was probably Stop drunk it. When she was driving, too. I'm just going to be honest.
Also, sounds like something I would do.
Please don't. Please do not buy a Bentley and start doing that, because that is expensive.
Well, we don't
of course, this
taxis.
Was also in London, so it was probably not as bad, but it was expensive, but not quite to that same level.
Mm.
Away from the prying eyes of her strict Southern family, Tallulah drank to excess, had sex to excess, and took drugs. When she went on days-long drinking binges, she would not eat food, and when it came to sex, she slept with men and or women. And I cut part of the sentence out, or part of the section out, because I didn't like how it was stated, just to be perfectly clear, because this is all quoted. After several abortions before the age of 30, she nearly died from advanced venereal disease, which necessitated an emergency hysterectomy.
Oh, yikes. Poor thing. Also, what makes sex excessive? I don't like that wording either. I'm going to do who I want to do when I want to do it, as long as they're of age.
Yeah, but condoms weren't a thing, number one. So you have a lot of diseases being spread, and I think that's more or less kind of what they're talking about. Obviously, birth control wasn't a thing either. So the only birth control were abortions, which were not great at the time either. So that's why she ended up having an emergency hysterectomy by the age of 30. So, and also she's a woman in the 1920s doing all of this stuff. So any amount of sex outside of marriage was excessive, let's be honest. But what you might like, you're going to like this. According to bi.org, she is quoted as saying, quote, "I don't know what I am, darling. I've tried several varieties of sex. Going down on a woman gives me a stiff neck, and going down on a man gives me lockjaw. And conventional sex gives me claustrophobia." Bank had never publicly described herself as being bi. She did, however, describe herself as ambisextrous.
Girl, go off.
This is a different term. Same, I don't know that they really had a term back then. So maybe that was the best she could come up with. But obviously she was good either way. Another quote from her, according to Britannica.com, quote, "My father warned me about men and booze, but he never mentioned a word about women and cocaine," end quote.
She is just so quotable. I want to get a shirt with that on it. Do you imagine?
She lived her life by her rules. That is for damn sure. Walking around with that quote on a shirt.
It's just got a set of tits on it with it, like, in the words are written in cocaine on the tits.
Obviously, because that's the only way we could do this. God. But despite all of the reports of her outlandish behavior, she was also known to be devoted to her work, even described as an inspiration to other actors, as she would refuse to cancel performances, even when dealing with illnesses or deaths. Her performances were often the saving touches on bad dramas. According to awhf.org, for her finest performances, she received two awards: the Critics Award for The Skin of Our Teeth in 1942 and the New York Screen Critics Award for the Alfred Hitchcock film Lifeboat in 1943. She was dedicated to her craft and fellow craftsmen. Quote, "Alabama has produced no actress, and indeed the nation has produced few who were in the class of professional competency as with Miss Bankhead. The consensus of the dramatic world seems to have been that if you had Tallulah in a play, the script and supporting cast were of only minor importance." So wrote Carl Elliott Sr. He also said, "I fear Tallulah has suffered from the sometimes swashbuckling, sometimes naughty character she played on stage and screen. However, I feel, and on the basis of that feeling, I argue that she should be primarily judged on her qualities as a dramatic actress. By that yardstick, she is eternally great." End quote.
What was that word? Swashbuckling?
Swashbuckling. I know you're thinking pirates immediately.
That I don't know why I like that term. Mm-mm. Just something about it sounds great.
No reason.
No, nothing about pirates.
After all that time in various roles and types of roles, theater and motion pictures, she also became a radio personality and MC of an award-winning NBC radio program, The Big Show. It aired from 1950 to 1952, discontinued as advertisers moved to supporting network television. According to EncyclopediaofAlabama.org, The Big Show's blend of comedy and performances by guest stars was enlivened by Bankhead's unbridled enthusiasm, good-natured interactions with guests, and ready wit, assisted by Jane and Goodman Ace, two of the best writers in the business. Notable friends who performed with her included Fred Allen, Fanny Bryce, Groucho Marx, Ethel Merman, Jimmy Durante, the comedy team of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis, Judy Garland, Ethel Barrymore, Margaret Truman, and Louis Armstrong. After the big show ended, Bankhead was among the first guests on many television variety shows that replaced it. And obviously she was on the Lucille show.
God, she's done show. So much. And like, I can't even fold my laundry, but I did wash it. So
you're also not on drugs all the time. So, you know,
well,
we do what we can do. Not that kind. I mean, uncontrolled in any way, shape, or form type. It was at this time that Tallulah wrote her autobiography and had yet another excess to add to her name and resume. The book was a New York Times bestseller, selling over 10 million copies, and was a selection of the Sears Readers Book Club. Her version of publicizing the book included nightclub appearances along with the national tour, of course. Despite the fact that she probably could have sat down to enjoy her successes at this point, she continued performing on both stage as well as television. Quote, cameo appearances as herself in the 1957 episode, The Celebrity Next Door, which is the part that I showed you guys on the Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz show, and as the Black Widow in the 1960s Batman series, have become cult classics. Her last theatrical appearance was in Tennessee Williams' play, The Milk Train Doesn't Stop Here Anymore, in 1963. Her last film was the 1965 British horror movie Die, Die, My Darling. Her last television appearance was as the Black Widow in the Batman series in 1967. And that was from encyclopediaofalabama.org.
Dang, she was 65?
65, yep. She also tried to work for racial tolerance and equality in America after she returned in 1931, especially in the areas of sports and the performing arts. According to womenshistorynetwork.org, according to encyclopediaofalabama.org, and then it's actually from both of those websites. Bankhead first engaged in political activism in the 1930s during the Great Depression. Fredrickson explains that in 1936, Bankhead, quote, lent her support to National Sharecroppers Week, something her father found particularly embarrassing, end quote. Oh. In 1939, Tallulah advocated for Workers' Progress Administration, which was the WPA, support for the theater. In addition, she campaigned for the acquittal of the Scottsboro Boys, the nine young black men wrongly convicted in Alabama, which I actually have already covered. And I actually think I might have mentioned that she was against that also.
Oh, I don't remember that.
When Alabama-born boxer Joe Louis knocked out German contestant Max Schmeling, and I don't really care, the Nazi party favorite, in a June 22nd, 1938 rematch, Bankhead leapt to her feet shouting approval. An avid baseball fan in the 1940s and 50s, she cheered fellow Alabamians Willie Mays and Willie McCovey, members of the then New York Giants, her favorite team. She also became a friend and supporter of musicians W.C. Handy, a fellow Alabamian, Louis Armstrong, and Billie Holiday. In the early 1950s, she helped support Handy in his attempt to organize a fund supporting young black musicians. Armstrong joined her as a guest on The Big Show in its second week and was among several African Americans to appear on the show, including performers Ella Fitzgerald, Ethel Waters, Josephine Baker, The Ink Spots, and political scientist and diplomat Ralph Bunche. Or Bunch, I guess would be the correct. In the 1948 presidential election, she campaigned for Democratic candidate Harry S. Truman, who vowed, if elected, to integrate the U.S. military. When introducing him on nationwide radio on October 21, 1948, she noted that Truman was the partisan of our troubled millions, which listeners understood as the nation's African Americans. After Truman won the election, Bankhead was invited to sit with the president's family during his inauguration. From the presidential reviewing stand, she loudly booed strident segregationist and then governor of South Carolina, Strong Thurmond, when his float passed by. That's you. If you were there.
That's me. That would be me.
In December 1952, Bankhead wrote an article for Ebony Magazine, quote, the world's greatest musician, in which she honored her friend Louis Armstrong, comparing him favorably to William Shakespeare. In January 1960, she contributed A Southerner looks at prejudice to Ebony and reminded readers that racial equality was long overdue, that talent has no color line, and that racial discrimination was not just the South's problem, but America's problem.
Still is.
It is, unfortunately. Tallulah Bankhead died on December 12, 1968, just over a month shy of her 67th birthday, of pneumonia complicated by emphysema and her long addiction to smoking. She was buried in St. Paul's Churchyard. Do what?
She couldn't get away from, like, those respiratory infections.
No. And I mean, I think that kind of says something, too. Because she did have bronchitis. They said she had chronic bronchitis the whole time she was growing up.
Yeah.
I mean, still 67, as early as that is, that's, and the kind of partying she did, I'm sure, that's
probably
not bad, considering.
That's still young.
She was buried in St. Paul's Churchyard, Chesterton, Maryland, in her sister Eugenia's family plot. I really liked how the article in womenshistorynetwork.org closed their summary of Tallulah. Though she enjoyed playing the careless rebel, Tallulah was a champion of the poor, the outsider, and the underdog. While she sometimes got it wrong, she rarely kept quiet about what she thought was right. As Bankhead told Ebony in 1960, quote, "I say if you believe in something, say it so loud enough to be heard," end quote.
What a cool person.
And that is it.
It's
that
so
is my that's my biography, short biography.
Well, I think it's Bankhead. I think it's really interesting to see people like her who are like so outwardly open with like who they are as a person and all of that stuff, and to be talked about in the way that she was talked about, especially when it came to like her sexuality and like her party lifestyle, and to feel the pressure of that on herself, and to look outward and say, "Hey, I don't like the way other people are being treated because I don't like being treated like that." I'm not saying that's why she did it. It's just, it's always interesting to see these people who seem rebellious and out of control and all that stuff standing on the side of a better future, being the smart ones in the situation, you know? So, you know, next time
I think some of that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, next time you see, you know, your party aunt at Thanksgiving, pour her another vodka. Yeah, she's probably standing on the right side of history.
Hi, it's probably
I'm
me.
I'm that aunt.
Well, what I was going to say is I think a lot is, there's a lot to be said for people who come from very protected and
sheltered.
Restricted backgrounds, sheltered backgrounds. When they go out and they actually enter into real life and they see things as they really are. I mean, she went from Alabama to New York. That's got to be whiplash. And then from New York to London. So complete culture shock from that. And then back to the United States and to New York and then to LA. So I feel like she probably had a lot of doses of reality. And I think some of it was rebellion. So it gave her probably some life experiences that she probably didn't really want to have. But it's just kind of what goes along with it, especially if you're a young woman who is, quote, unprotected and also wants to do what they want to do and has the power to do so. And I think she saw things and she was real enough because probably her own experiences that she wasn't respected and she was judged for her actions. So it might have made her more aware of the injustices around her. And she didn't seem to only hang around high society either. So that gave her probably a better view of real life and what people went through. And it seems like, at least just based on the causes that she supported, she cared. And she genuinely cared about the people around her and didn't just say she cared, but stood up for them whenever she could and whenever she had an opportunity to do so.
Yeah, I agree. So what we're trying to tell everybody out there is leave your hometown. Don't Hallmark movie it. And find a man who works at a flower shop and get married and stay there. No, you need to go to London and you need to have sex and do drugs.
That is not what we're saying.
Maybe not that last part. Go to London if that's what you want to do. Have sex if that's what you want to do. Do drugs responsibly.
Be true to yourself. You have the ability to do things responsibly and safely, so please do.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe pay attention to the world around you, especially the world that's outside of what you normally see. And listen to other people and their experiences. Don't dismiss them. You might learn something.
Yeah. And watch One Piece. That'll
and watch One Piece, obviously. That has nothing to do with any of this. Why not?
I looked down and I saw my little One Piece.
Of course you did.
I was like, oh, yeah. That's a good way to learn how to get out and travel and
way to do it. Don't follow crazy people that just have an idea in their head and have no idea how to accomplish said goal or theory. They're going to do it.
You might
and he somehow gets so many people involved. I don't understand.
I'm going to go with him for Halloween.
It'll be awesome.
Yeah. So be ready. I'm making my straw hat. Yeah, you could be.
I got the red hair.
Kelty, what are you going to be? Who's the slingshot dude?
I don't watch the show. I don't know anything.
My God. We should have watched that Saturday night. I'm telling you.
Should have.
It's really good.
Good show. Good show.
I can't think of his name right now, but I would be offended right now, Kelsey.
I forgot his name, and I've seen it. Like I've seen the live action multiple times. I'm working on the animation right now, so
no, the anime is good.
It's a lot. There's a lot. So
we got off topic again, but at least this is the end. So.
It is. Yeah, it is. Well, thank you. This was not what I was expecting, and I'm glad you did it because I wasn't quite ready for anything super intense or sad.
I'll save that for next time.
Oh, great. I love it. Anyway, until next time, we love you. We mean it.
Okay, bye.
The Reaper will come.